Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Okay, so here's one that is one of the most common, missions. You know, the for an unorthodox or semi-believing member, probably the biggest problem, that they face is this notion of one true church, exclusive truth claims, we're the only path, and everybody else is inferior. And that's pretty much what a mission's about. A mission's not about, see if this will help you. It's not about, hey, you know, join the social club. The mission is about, everyone else's church is wrong. Our church is the one true church, and you got to join. And I've tried to imagine if I could raise my son or daughter to be a progressive New Order Mormon or whatever type of belief, you know, devout believer thinker, and that by the age 19 or 21, they're going to be able to go on a mission and speak metaphorically and transcendently and still get along with the mission president and their colleagues, but also feel true to themselves. And I have no idea whether that's even freaking possible. But what about missions? I'll start with Heather.
Regarding whether we want them or don't want them to do that?
Yeah, and whether it's good or bad or possible or not possible or...
I didn't serve a mission, so I don't have experience in that regard. I got married at the insane age of 19, so that was a non-issue. My daughter did ask me recently, though, had I been 21, and we could go down that path, that whole 19 versus 21, who has to, who doesn't, but we won't. Had I been 21, would I have wanted to? And I just said, you know... I kind of cringed and I said, this sounds kind of bad, but I don't think I would have wanted to. I think that would have been extremely difficult for me. And she just said, oh, I'm so glad you said that because I don't think I want to either. And I said, well, and that's okay for you, but for whatever reason, it's more okay for women to make that choice than it is for men. I don't care if my son, since currently he would be the only one that actual rule would apply to. I don't think I care if he does. I don't think I care if he doesn't. To me, I just hope that when he gets to be 19, he can do it if he wants to. And if he wants to, I think I'll be supportive. I mean, I think that there's enough good that can be had from that experience that I'd be okay supporting it. If he doesn't want to do it, I'll also support him. I think that is a very hard choice for people who do that because there is such a stigma associated with it. But I will also say that when we went and had the ultrasound when I was pregnant with him, we found out that it was a boy. We didn't want a boy for whatever reason. We just thought we wanted three girls, so it was weird. But when we were driving home after that ultrasound, I said to Brent, I said, well, okay, well, we thought we wanted three girls, but it was cool, you know, when you see the baby, and I mean, that's an awesome experience. Right, you know, you feel better about it. And he said, I'm just sick of thinking that he's going to have to serve a mission. And I was very surprised to hear that was like one of the first things that he thought. My husband served a mission. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would say that he regrets it, not the whole experience, but he would say that it was, he might actually, I don't know, that it was extremely difficult for him and very, very uncomfortable often for him to be in that position that you're saying. He was in Spain, telling all these people for whom Catholicism is very real and very valuable that they're wrong and that whatever thing that everyone that they know and their whole country has been doing is wrong and they need to do this, that was very, very hard for him to do. And so that just spoke to me of how powerful that experience is, whether for good or for bad, you know, for ill. Right. That he, in that moment, as soon as he found out that he was going to have a son, just thought, oh, geez, I don't want him to feel like he has to do that.
Yeah. Laurie?
You know, it's important to me that, because I have two boys, it's important to me that they understand the gospel before they make that decision, like the doctrine. They know the doctrine of the church. One of the reasons I keep them in, their extended family, you know, if we didn't teach them and they didn't go on a mission, they wouldn't be able to explain why, you know. But they need to have that education. I want them to know real church history before they go. I want them to know, you know, warts and all, the real church before they choose to go or not go. And if after that they want to go and it's in their belief system, and, you know, if my 19-year-old boys want to make the world a better place and they think going on a mission can do that, I'm going to create the space around that for them to go. And, you know, I'll send them care packages and support their success and all of that. Is it what I want? Do I, you know, honestly, I'd rather have them sitting in an ashram in India right. meditating with me, but I'd love to put enough space around them to have their own experiences, their own way of relating spiritually. I hope more than anything that they grow up with some sense of spirituality and connection to divine, whatever that form that takes for them, I'm okay with.
Gotcha. That's good. Lee?
I had a profound life-changing experience as a missionary in West Japan, but probably for different reasons than the church would want me to have experienced. I spent a year in Hiroshima and became a anti-nuclear war activist while on my mission. And I had this tremendous experience of having an investigator who was a Zen Buddhist. And one time when I was teaching him one of the last lessons, he was meditating out in his backyard, and I observed an altered state of consciousness in this man that impressed me, and it was profoundly spiritual and moving. And when his wife let us in and we went into the home and sat and relaxed for 20-30 minutes before he came in, we commented on what he was doing. His wife explained it. He came in and then talked to us a little bit about this and then said, let's get involved in the scriptures because I'm really interested in some questions that I want to ask you about some of the things that happen in the Book of Mormon and the New Testament. And quoted from Ecclesiastes about there is no new thing under the sun, and how that synced up with Zen for him in regards to suffering and illusions and unattachment. And it was a rich experience for me. And 6 months later, when I went and visited him, he still did his Zen meditation, and he told me about the branch president confronting him that you've got to make a choice between Zen and Mormonism. And he said, no, I'm still seeing how this really they complement one another, and I don't want to change this. And the branch president said, well, you shouldn't be doubting the church this way. And he said, oh, I'm not doubting. I'm just really doing what Joseph Smith did. And it had a profound influence on my life. I remembered that deeply as I had my kids, and from the moment they started singing, I hope they call me on a mission, I would talk with them about what my mission meant to me. But I said to them, and by no means do I wish that you would interpret from this that I have an expectation that you go on a mission, because I and Marilyn had no expectation that my four kids go on a mission. The church didn't impose an expectation on them. I wouldn't let the church do it, in spite of the fact that they sang the songs and had the conversations that almost created an expectation. They never got it. In spite of that, two daughters went on missions, one to Chile, and my youngest daughter, Amy, went to Japan and confronted in a fairly painful way this mandate that you teach the one true church, and she took it in a different direction. She spent most of her 18 months there trying to help people who had disaffected or no longer felt part of the community come back in and fill a place in it if they wanted to do that.
Mm, that's awesome. That's a great idea. Well, I'll just say that I loved my mission experience like no other. It's one of the most important things I've ever gone through. I hope my children will have the chance to do it if they want to. And if they don't, I hope we can brainstorm and come up with a comparable experience for them in some other format that gives them the same type of thing. That's what I'll say there. Well, you know, we've avoided one of the most important topics that we could ever talk about, and this is absolutely crazy. we haven't talked about how to deal with church history in our children. Can you believe that? It's insane that we've gotten all the way to missions and we haven't talked about that. How do you deal with peepstones and polyandry and masonry and blacks with your children?
Honestly. I mean, I had a conversation with my 10-year-old. That's been a few months ago. He was talking about Joseph Smith, and I just thought, you know, I've got to throw this stuff in there whenever possible. He was talking about Joseph Smith. We were having a great talk, and I said, he was a fun guy, you know. He did a lot of fun stuff. We talked about how he had a temper and how he was really visionary. And I said, and did you know he had a lot of wives? And I said it just like that. Did you know he had a lot of wives? And he cocks his head and he looked at me and he said, my 10-year-old, what? You're supposed to have one wife. And I said, yeah, aren't you? And he cocks his head and he goes, the world is sure funny. he gets it. You know, he gets that he's going to know that Joseph wasn't perfect and I'm not going to hide anything from him, nor am I going to feel like teach him that the church is teaching us a lie. All we can do is teach him the truth. And you know, what my husband teaches me over and over is to use a sense of humor with them. A sense of humor, like, these guys are kind of nuts. Let's have a good discussion about Brigham Young, you know. And so they get a little more balance on the discussion. I don't know. Any other thoughts?
It's tough.
I've tried to teach my kids how to see the full picture of a character like Joseph Smith, but I certainly wouldn't limit it to Joseph Smith, nor would I limit it to just human beings who live imperfect lives and have imperfect experiences and model perhaps sometimes things that contradict their beliefs. But, you know, stay with Joseph Smith for a while. My kids bumped into some of the things that they felt the church hadn't necessarily hidden from them, but they didn't know about this stuff. And so when Marilyn was doing the manuscript for Mormon Enigma, the really good biography about Emma Smith, we took delight in looking at a reframing of how we view the personality and character of Joseph Smith, and actually had humorous moments the day after Joseph Smith had a lengthy conversation with Emma about polygamy, and she was publicly and personally very unhappy with that. Joseph's diary had one entry the next day, spent the entire day in conversation with Emma. And you know, my kids looked at that and said, you know, that's a reality. We understand that. We appreciate that. When my kids became adults and they started struggling with polygamy, which was the pivotal issue for them, for me it was blacks in the priesthood, and it was untenable for me at one point. In fact, I really was filled with unsettling doubt for many, many years until 1978, and even after that, my question never got answered. Did God change his mind, or did the church just come to a realization, this is racist, we've got to change it? Mm-hmm. But to my point, we have this issue of polygamy. My kids are wrestling with it. And instead of saying, just ignore it and exercise good faith, which is what the church wants us to do, I gave them the Bachman thesis, said, read this. Let's have a conversation about it, because I've come to a place of peace with this, even though I really have questions about the veracity of this commandment coming from God to Joseph Smith. And you know, they were the ones who challenged me. Dad, you're compartmentalizing, and you've told us that it probably isn't a healthy thing to compartmentalize. And I said, yep, I contradict myself, and therefore that's all you can conclude from that, is I contradict myself. I try to be as transparent as I can with my doubts, the things that I wrestle with when things become evident that the history that the church has presented seems to be in contradiction with what I have come to realize is fact. But I also want to go to other sources and make sure that I'm grounding the challenges that I'm experiencing with my own cognitive dissonance with rational, intelligent human beings who have read the same material and come to different conclusions about it and still exercise faith.
Good stuff. Well, I'll just say my little two bit, and that's just that I think that by the age of 12 at the latest, there are certain things you just have to have told your kid. You have to tell your kid that the traditional version of the martyrdom just isn't the way it went down. And to do that, the only way to tell that story is to tell your kids that Joseph was practicing polygamy, that he was denying it, and that even Emma didn't know what was going on in many instances. I think you have to tell them about blacks in the priesthood. I think you have to tell them about the way that Joseph Smith translated the Book of Mormon with the hat and the peepstones. I think you're doing them a disservice to not let them know at some point pretty early on that it was kind of kooky how that went down. I think you have to tell them that there are serious questions about the Book of Mormon's literalness in terms of its historicity, and it being a true sort of record, ancient record of ancient American inhabitants. I think that you have to denounce any of the correlations between dark skin and cursings of God, you know, as something that, well, not denounce, but I think you have to suggest that maybe those aren't true, or that maybe you can't support those or whatever. You know, I mentioned Black from the Priesthood, I'm sure. But I think that for the major things, you're just doing them a disservice if you send them out into the world not knowing those things. And so as Laurie started with at the very beginning saying openness and honesty, I think you have to teach them those things. And in my experience, there'll be some dissonance, there'll be some confusion, but the kids, you know, 12 and above can handle that. And it very much maps to what we have to do about Thomas Jefferson and what we have to do about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. Most people don't know about Martin Luther King Jr., maybe, but his private life is scandalous in many ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just going down the line, you just don't have a powerful public figure, Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson, Bill Clinton, I mean, just name it, and there's scandal. And so I think it's just an important part of a comprehensive approach to history where you teach the warts and the beauty simultaneously. We also teach the wonderful things about Joseph and Brigham Young, et cetera. But you got to do them both. That's my take.
I think we agree with you. But what does a couple do? And I'm fortunate enough to where my spouse is in agreement with me. What if you're the non-believer or the New Order Mormon and your spouse won't even discuss those issues with you? What do you do? Those people are stuck. What do they do?
And that is a beautiful, well, I think that we're going to have a couple episodes dedicated to mixed faith marriages. I don't want to shut down the conversation, but I'll offer that as a first response. Any others want to respond? Okay. Well, my quick response is that patience, go slowly, have heart to hearts with your believing spouse and say, look, this is in the Ensign. This is sold. You know, this stuff is in church publications, and let's do it in a loving way and in a gentle way, but try and be patient and enticing to your believing spouse to say, can we please try and give them a fuller picture? And it may even make the case to them that they don't want to raise their kid in a way to where the kid's going to feel betrayed and deceived later on. And I think that with love and patience, and you can make that case to a believing spouse, and the believing spouse will buy it over time. If you manage your credit, as Heather likes to say, if you manage your capital or credit judiciously.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
How's that?
Always comes back to love.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Okay. So I think it makes sense to spend a little bit of time talking about how to marry the Mormon spiritual tradition with the many other bounteous spiritual traditions that are out there. And, you know, Lee, you've already talked about taking your kids to Jewish things and, you know, Catholic things and ecumenical things. Let me start with Laurie, because I think this is probably something close to Laurie's heart.
You know, just this sense of curiosity. is what I want to instill in my children, this great adventure of who or what God is, you know. And I don't want to give them a context for that, because words alone don't even cover that. And, you know, I love the story of the moon and the finger pointing at the moon. Do we know this story?
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's great. Nope, tell it.
No, that's right.
There's a Buddhist story about, you know, the moon is... it's the Tao, it's the Dharma, it's the way, it's the truth, right? That's what the moon represents. And so these, was it two monks? I can't remember. Man's pointing at the moon saying, look at the moon, look at the moon. And the other person sees the light on the man's finger and how beautiful his hand is in the moonlight. And he goes, oh, it's so beautiful, but he's not really seeing the moon. The idea is that there's no words for what deep, true spirituality really is, for what God really is. Language cannot encompass it. So the best that we have with religion, with spirituality, is a finger pointing at the moon. So, you know, can we point it in the best way we can? You know, can we give them a lots different shapes of fingers? I mean, I just feel like they need space. They need a lot of space. How dare I define that for them? Can I share a lot of rich stories and things that work for me, that literally work for me? What's going on in my mind? How do I still the craziness in my own mind? How can my body give me insight and healing and bring me to wholeness? You know, those are things I can teach them that I know. How can we teach them to love nature? All of these things. So for somebody who's lost the Mormon faith and is maybe feeling lost, I would say, what speaks to you? Where do you feel peaceful? Where do you feel connected to others? What brings you love and joy? That's what we should share with our children. And a non-believer, somebody who's lost their faith should own that as just as valid as what their believing spouse is offering. And that's my two cents on that one.
And we should just make it clear that you sort of, I don't know, believing or practicing Buddhist, but you definitely resonate with the Eastern teachings, right?
Definitely. They, you know, it's, I love, something that makes me feel comfortable about Mormonism is that I speak that language, right? I understand the language and the vernacular. But when I started to read, the Buddhist texts, the yoga history, all of those, the yoga sutras, all of a sudden, my mind was open in a way that it wasn't open in before. So I've had a sense of awakening that's happened with this new language and this new viewpoint. I want my children to have that same awakening in whatever language they understand, in whatever shape their hand and finger takes. And I want to give them as many opportunities as I can, you know, taking them to the Buddhist temple and the Hindu temple and to yoga class and to, you know, meditation centers, those things. And just talking kindly about other religions. I love that my kids come home from school and say, you know, why does Siddhartha's mom wear a sheet? You know, let's talk about that, you know, all the different religions and all the different choices. And I want them to speak a lot of languages that way, you know.
Beautiful. Heather?
A couple things, I guess. I feel like, well, I don't feel like I'm a very spiritual person. I listen to other people talk about that, whether from inside or from out, you know, from inside the church or from a different perspective, and what that means for them. And I feel like I feel a little bit distant from that, and I don't feel, you know, like a broken toy or anything. I just sort of feel like for some people there must be sort of a stronger pull, or maybe that means that other people nurture that pull more than I have. I don't know. So sometimes I feel like, though, maybe where the church leaves holes for me, I haven't done a very good job of trying to fill those in, maybe either for myself or for my kids. So we haven't really, also we have lived in places where there's not, I mean, we've lived in the South where there's definitely less religious diversity than maybe there are in other places. I feel like the best that I've done, though, is to just, kind of like Lori was saying, just have conversations and to try to communicate the message to them that we aren't the only ones that are right and that we shouldn't feel sorry for people. just to be aware that there are many people, in fact, you know, 99 point whatever percent of the planet that is not LDS. Many of those people, most of those people are happy wherever they are. But I think that has to be done. I think that has to be done carefully. I'm an education professor, so I talk to my students all the time about differentiated instruction, which just basically means, I mean, and that's a really hard. I see this sort of metaphor. That's a hard thing for some of my students to understand, because what they know is that when they were in school just a few years ago, a teacher stood up at the front of the room and told them stuff. And they wrote it down, and sometimes they copied it, and then the teacher gave a test, and then they spit it all back. And if they spit it all back the way the teacher had told it to them, they get a good grade. And study after study after study has shown that despite what happens in teacher education programs, most people, when they get jobs as teachers, go back to whatever way that they were taught. So I kind of feel like, you know, trying to expose my students to this different idea, or this idea that all students learn in different ways, that you can't stand up in front of the classroom and just lecture. You can't expect your students to all get it in the same method. You can't expect them to all demonstrate performance via the same, you know, type of assessment. That's very hard for them. But if you take that and then think about it in terms of religion, it kind of makes sense to me that God would also do that. That God would also have set up a way, or many ways, not just one way, many ways for us to communicate with Him and about Him, and that lots of different places and methods would resonate with different people. So well, my kids have asked me things about different religious practices too, and we just try to say, you know, or Kennedy came home not too long ago and said that they had talked in school about how drinking red wine, I think, was good for you. So she was kind of confused about that. So then we had a conversation about how lots of religions have different things that they are either supposed to eat or not supposed to eat. And so we just had a conversation about it. We have lots of conversations, I guess, at my house.
Hmm. That's good stuff. You're geeking education out on us, Heather.
I guess. Was that terrible?
That was awesome. All right, Lee, I know you have some thoughts about this. Anything else you want to add to what you said earlier?
Just playing off of what Heather said about people have different learning styles. They have different ways of incorporating knowledge and wisdom that has come to them. One thing that is just so crystal clear to me is I really am responsible for my spirituality. I acknowledge I have a soul, I have a spirit, and just as I have to feed my body and exercise my muscles to keep my physical being in shape, I have to nurture and feed and tone my spirituality in order to keep it vibrant and healthy and moving my life in the direction where I want it to go. I'm not so much in charge of my religious life. I view my experience with Mormonism as powerful and influential and beneficial, and I use the church as a facilitating tool. And I've tried to instill that in with my kids. And I recognize there are times that I become anxious because I'm questioning their degree of conformity. And in essence, I'm questioning my own degree of conformity. And in that confusion, I have to stay in the question long enough to say, okay, how am I dealing with how this religious experience is connected to my spirituality, and that I'm declaring I'm responsible for my spirituality. So I think, you know, one thing that I've really tried to underscore to my kids over and over again, get comfortable with ambiguity. Get comfortable with conflict. Get comfortable with contradiction. Life is full of them. And yes, life isn't fair, but the best you can, if you groom that spirituality to an ever-improving point, recognizing that perfection is not what you're trying to attain, you can overcome a lot, and you can also live your life leaning into that constant light that I believe God has made evident to us in abundant ways.
Mm. Hallelujah. That's good stuff.
Well, don't quote me on it, because I might be the devil. What do you think the devil looked like?
Right. All right.
Broadcast.
Well, wow. We're actually coming near the end of our questions. Can you guys believe that?
Yeah.
Well, I've got a few more, though. Can you guys take a couple more?
I can.
All right. Here we go. Let's deal with predictions for the future for a second. There are a couple predictions that I've heard as common. And I'm going to lump them all in so that we don't have to go around the horn two or three different times. The first prediction is the one that Jeffrey Holland gave in a conference several times ago, that like, if you become this progressive liberal hippie Mormon, or if you become a semi-believer or a non-believer, that you're going to sow the seeds of your children's destruction and they're going to become adulterers and pedophiles. And he didn't say half of what I'm saying, but the general gist was one of fear, that if you don't stand up and walk up to every jot and tittle, that you are putting your children's health and well-being in jeopardy. That's one fear that I think has been promulgated at times, although I admit that I grossly mischaracterized what his speech was. But I think it's not too far off from the impression that people get from it. I'll just say that. A second fear that people have is that it goes in the other direction. What if I'm this progressive hippie, whatever, Mormon, but my kid becomes a dogmatic true believer, conservative, and they think I'm lesser, and they think that I am inferior, what to do then? And so there are all sorts of predictions or projections that are made, and I just think it would be fun to go around the horn and talk about how we are thinking about those things, which ones we reject, which ones we think have validity, and, how we want to speak to it. So I'm going to start with Heather this time.
Oh, I was thinking, I hope he starts with somebody
else.
I'm going to
start with Laurie this time. And then we're
no. Laurie, do you want me to start? What?
Are you ready? Go ahead.
That's fine. That's a hard, gosh, that's a really hard question. I guess all I can say is what I hope, and that is I hope that I can be happy if my kids are happy. I mean, we've had lots of conversations with our kids about things that we don't care about, and we've told them, basically, Brent has actually told them that the only thing that they could do that will make it, he doesn't want them breaking laws. I mean, we don't want, prison sentences, but he's told them before that if he ever catches wind that they were mean to somebody else at school, that they're in big trouble. That's just a line in the sand for him. But he basically has told them, anything else, you got to come talk to us about it. So I just hope that if they, whatever path they choose, that I can be okay with it, whether it's being more or less believing or more or less traditional. And I hope that they can get to a place that they can, offer that same sort of support to us wherever we end up.
Hmm. Nice.
Now, who knows if that's going to happen, but we're being hopeful, right?
Yep. Oh, yes. That's the theme of the day is windmills. We're all about windmills today.
I mean, I hope, I'm guessing that my parents won't ever hear this because they don't do very many internet-related things. But I feel like they would think that of me and that's what they would want also. So I hope that extends in both directions.
Beautiful. Let's go to Lee.
I think fears about our place in the world, our place in the church, our place in the family are triggered by a lack of information, a lack of understanding of how we function. I know when I become fearful of something, it's because I bought a story that may have fact not been grounded in reality. So I acknowledge there are things that trigger fear in me, and I just have to try to deal with them as much as I possibly can, but hopefully in the context of religion and, more importantly for me, spirituality, I can put those off fairly quickly and get back to my base of being, my reason for being, my angle of repose, if you will, which is I look at life from a place of abundance, not scarcity. And if I look at life from a place of abundance, I'm not worried about running out of time or money or love or care or concern about the people that matter most to me. If I'm working from a place of abundance, yeah, I may recognize fear, but I'm constantly motivated by a different standard to live into the possibilities and to take risk and to constantly be considering how can I be inspired by this message, by this person who loves me and wants me to live to a higher standard, or more importantly, if God is speaking to me in a very direct way, inspiring me to act a certain way, to think a certain way, to feel a certain way, then I want to be ready to act on that in a way of abundance rather than, well, I'm going to do this because I fear God's punishment.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You guys are
easier said than done.
You guys are brilliant. All right, Lori, bring us home on this one.
It's just, isn't it? It's just second nature for parents to look at their children and every time they mess up in school, project them as homeless, right? We have these huge projections and it's so second nature. It's not real. It's not real. We have no idea what our children are going to end up being, and wasting all that time and energy projecting into the future of what if, first of all, you have to let go of what you want for them. It's not about them. And it comes back to you. You know, they're only going to be as grounded and giving and stable as you are, right? So you've got to make peace with yourself, get yourself in line so that you can manifest a strong, healthy, happy adult, your child to become an adult that's strong, healthy, and happy. And if you're going to take, here's my suggestion, if you're going to go into projection, right, into illusion, you might as well create one that's beautiful and helpful, right? So do you have like this beautiful picture of who your child is and what they could become? Might as well spend some time, you know, daydreaming on that one. And I think there's this little Irish poem, and I wish I could remember the whole thing. It says, there's a line in it, and it says, "May the wind always be at your back."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's all I want to do for my kids. Can I be that positive little blowing at their back constantly? Just, I believe in you. I see the best in you. And when your fear from any religion starts to melt away, there's a whole well of love under there. Can we just take that love, that optimism? You know, Lee was really wise when he was talking about the abundance. Can we blow that at their backs and support them? And kids tend to live up to your expectations for them. So why not choose some good ones and a beautiful picture of who they could become, you know?
Mm. Mwah. Well, I don't want to disempower what you guys have all said. I'll just swing back the other way and just say one thing, and that's that I counsel with people who have left the church all the time, and I'm telling you, they're not coming from hippie parents. They're coming from Orthodox, sort of hardcore parents. And so if you're trying to game where you think your kids are going to end up, chances are, like maybe you guys have said before, you might be disappointed because people just leave the church. I mean, 2/3 of all the people who've left the church have left it. So, I mean, if you're trying to game that, I think you're going to have a hard time. I think you guys, what you guys have said is just so empowering and affirming and this is wonderful. This has helped me so much. I can't even tell you guys. Just to hear you guys talk has been such a gift to me. So, all right. So, I guess there's other things that we may have missed and there are other things we might be able to say. I'm inclined to want to just give everyone a final chance to leave some parting thoughts. So with that, I guess, Lee, I've been making you go last too much, so I'm going to make you go first. Is that okay?
I'm fine with that.
All right. Give it to us.
in regards to this wonderful but very challenging responsibility of raising kids, I can't think of anything that I have enjoyed more in my entire life than raising kids, developing a relationship with them. And my kids eavesdrop on conversations. I have friends ask me all the time, at what age did you enjoy your kids the most? And my kids laugh at me. I always end up saying today is when I enjoy my kids the very most. But it's challenging, isn't it? It's challenging because there are so many tough pressures that impose themselves on our relationships with our kids on a constant basis. And we would think that in an ideal world, the church would be this wonderful instrument, this haven of safety and peace that would complement every good thing that we could do to build courageous, bold, and dynamic human beings with our kids. But it doesn't always play out that way. So I go back to what I said a while back. I have never gone about having a relationship with my kids thinking that the end is to create good Latter-day Saints. If they end up being really, really terrific human beings with great definition as human beings and have great core values, and that happens to include identity as a Mormon, then I think there's a value added there. But if the church ends up being something that is dogmatic and it gets in the way of their being and they end up being resentful or bitter about it, then I don't wish it upon them. I don't want them to experience it that way. And because that hasn't been my experience with the church, I'm confident that they'll continue to see the church as a tool, a complement to ways in which they can become outstanding, courageous, and dynamic human beings.
Thank you, Lee. Laurie?
Yeah, I guess I kind of take comfort in the fact of knowing that as a parent, I'm really going to screw up, and I'm okay with that. You know, I've somehow made peace with the fact that it's not going to be perfect, and they're going to be on the therapy couch about their poor mom. But, you know, that's fine. I think I just, as far as the Mormon aspect goes and being a non-believer, I think I have to open my mind up enough to recognize that Mormonism is a viable path to God. And then I have to be okay with their choices, right? At the end of the day, it comes down to loving those kids and connecting with them and having their best interest at heart. And part of that for us is having this mixed faith family and making it work for everybody, supporting everybody. So that's it for me, just blowing some wind on their back, you know?
All right. Heather, bring us home.
Are you going to bring us home?
Nope, I'm done.
Oh, I guess I just have to feel like I have come to the conclusion that, I mean, I have wondered before, you know, is there a place for me in the church? I'm unorthodox, or I'm, you know, like I've said, there's very few things that I would say that I'm certain about, but I've come to the conclusion that that there is, and that I'm making one. I feel like I'm something of a square peg trying to cram myself into a round hole, and people are rubbing off some of my edges, and maybe some of those edges need to be rubbed, and I'm probably doing that to some other people. But I just feel like everybody probably is on their, I mean, everybody is on their own path, and we need to have more tolerance probably towards other people and a greater recognition of those differences. And I hope to achieve that with my kids. Like I said, I hope that wherever they end up, that the primary message they get from us is that we'll love them and that they can always come home regardless of what they've done or what they believe. One of my favorite primary songs is the song Children All Over the World that has the different languages in it. That's why I like it, basically, because I like different languages. But it says in that song, God, I don't want to sing it. Our Heavenly Father hears us. He understands each tongue. Our Heavenly Father knows us. He loves us, everyone. And every time we sing that song, I feel that love really powerfully, even though I don't really even know, I don't know that I could even describe what I think God is or what he looks like or whatever, but I feel something very powerful. And so in the end, that's just got to be okay, and it's got to be okay for me if my kids end up in that place or in a different place. So, yeah, maybe I'm hopeful too, John.
beautiful. Windmills, right?
That's right, windmills.
Well, Heather Olson, Laurie Gallagher, and Lee White, I can't thank you enough for this magical 2 or 3 hours that we've just spent. I will renew my offer to all our listeners, anyone who makes it through the 3 hours. The ice cream is on me at Aggie Ice Cream in Logan, Utah, whenever you're in the area. But you guys are brilliant, and I think if there is a God, it's evident by the fact that I chose you guys in this panel.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John, and Lori and Lee.
Good to meet y'all.
Y'all. You guys, too.
All right, and Lee, thanks.
Thank you. I had it on mute. It's nice to meet you, Heather, and John, and Laurie. If you're ever in Seattle, look us up. There's some great seafood places I'd love to take you to.
We'll do.
And does that offer extend to all our listeners?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. All right. Well, I'll just close by thanking everyone and encouraging you guys to go up to MormonStories.org. Check out the conversation there. Add your comments or feedback. Maybe we'll try and post some links, like to Lori's wonderful letter and other things that I may have mentioned that I'm now forgetting, maybe some poems or some songs. But please check us out, and thanks so much for listening. You guys take care.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at MormonStories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.